Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I am Andy Kirikides, but joined by my wonderful co-host, Keith Glasser. Keith, how we doing?
Great, how are you?
Got an interesting topic today. It's been in the news mostly because of the big leagues, but I do think it's worth a conversation to talk about youth sports, college sports, and kind of how this all applies. But the increase in arm injuries, and I don't want to call it an epidemic because I think if you break down some of the percentages, it's not like 70% of dudes are walking out there and getting TJ. I think Kendall Rogers has tweeted out in recent weeks or recently that there's been 9 or 10 established cases of Tommy John so far this season. I'm sure there's more than that because you don't have more than that. But I mean, when you think about the sample size, I don't think it diminishes the fact that Tommy John and arm injuries have increased, but I also don't want to paint this as like it's the end of the world. But I do think it's a really important topic to talk about because we got a lot of young kids coming up through the ranks, and I think that parents need to hear this. I think the coaches need to hear it, and I think we just need to have a general conversation about the topic, and we'll see where it takes us. So. Where do you want to start with this? I know there's a lot of different directions I'm sure we'll go, but where do you want to start this convo?
I don't know. I don't know. There's so much going on with this that I think that, and there's no real right or wrong. Well, I think there are some wrong answers in there, right? So I shouldn't say that. I think the problem when we start talking about arm injuries and arm care and all the like is, you know, we've talked about it on here, like the unlocking of velo, I think is something that obviously has played a role. You know, in Tommy John surgeries over the course of the last, you know, probably 10, 15 years, you know, and I don't have it in front of me, but I know, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, Dr. Andrews put out a thing saying that, you know, years ago, I used to just be doing major league guys, and then it trickled down to college guys and then high school. And now I'm doing, you know, middle-aged, you know, middle school kids, which, you know, that unto itself is absurd. And we can unpack that at a later date, but you know, I do think that in part it does come from, you know, throwing the baseball super hard. Now, does that mean that everybody who throws hard is going to blow out? No, it doesn't. You know, and Jeff, I think it was Jeff Passan who wrote the book, the Arm. It's actually a really great book. There's no real conclusion in the book. Essentially, it kind of just says, like, you know, some guys do, some guys don't. But, you know, there are Tommy John's in other sports and javelin throwing and things of that nature. And, you know, sometimes it's just the human body's not necessarily made to throw a baseball 103 miles an hour. And, you know, I don't know the answer to when it comes to when you should be throwing a curveball and thing, you know, I've seen things where it's like, well, they shouldn't throw a curveball till they're 13 or 14. Like, okay, but are they really spinning it that significant at that age to where like it's putting that much stress on tendons? I don't know. I'm not a biomechanist. I'm not a doctor, but I've seen 13-year-old breaking balls and it's essentially just a cement mixer or it just is a gravity ball to the plate. It's not really, you know, a sweeper as we like to call them nowadays, or a snapdragon slider that's being spun out there. So, you know, I think that there's, you know, for years there's been anecdotes, right? Like, you know, you shouldn't throw curveballs and you shouldn't do this. And, you know, velo is, you know, and I think weighted balls get thrown into that discussion. And, you know, things like driveline and tread in these places where, you know, the people think that, like, because you go there, it's going to be, you're going to blow out. And, like, you know, you do this long enough, you're going to have, you know, whether or not you're an outside business that is a facility or you're a coach or a pitching coach, a head coach, whatever it might be, like you're eventually going to run into somebody who's either had Tommy John who's in your program or will have Tommy John in your program. And sometimes, you know, I think for years, everyone was legitimately trying to figure out why, right? Like it would happen. You'd be like, what did I do wrong? What did this kid do to try to mitigate that risk moving forward? And I think that we've kind of, you know, as an industry moved past that a little bit. You know, but I do think that, you know, I'm on a little bit of a tangent here because there's so much going on, but you know, I do think the unlocking of velo plays a role. I do think throwing a ton of pitches at a super young age eventually plays a role. Like, I'm not necessarily a believer that your arm only has so many bullets in it, but I do believe in wear and tear. And, you know, 9-year-olds throwing 125 pitches is absurd. And frankly, if you're a 9U coach trying to win championships and throwing kids 120 pitches, like, it's a disgrace, honestly, like, because there's not a college coach in the country who might recruit your kid who gives a shit that your kid won the 9U championship and threw that many pitches. Nobody cares. I never recruited, like, you could ask every college coach in the country, like, they don't recruit guys like, oh, you're good at 9? Cool. Yeah, I don't care. So, like, it's more for the parents, I think, from those situations. But, you know, I do believe in the wear and tear aspect, you know, and even in high school, you know, I think that you hear nightmares about it. And I think, you know, you saw it when you played in high school and I did too. Like, you know, they don't have 13, 14, 15 arms like you do in college, right? Like, you know, but you have guys that will throw and then, like, they're not on a regular throwing plan. They're not throwing bullpens regularly. And then they go out and, well, no, they'll just throw him like 90 pitches. It's like he threw 40 4 weeks ago. He's thrown one bullpen. Now we're throwing him 90. Like, that stuff eventually adds up to the wear and tear part too. So, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, misinformation, a lot of, you know, non-education, and then just, you know, poor decisions / unfortunately to say this, like, naturally it can happen. You know, so I think there's a lot of things that go into this, and we can kind of unpack all of the stuff that I just threw out there. So I'm sorry on the front end of this, but I got on a soapbox and I got going. So I'm sorry.
I think one of the things before we dig in, because I do have some data pulled up that's interesting to talk about. And we can put some of this stuff in the show links so that people can read it, because there's some pretty accessible articles by some pretty reputable sources. But here's another thing that I have, there's a problem that I have with the conversation around Tommy John and arm injuries, is that I think there's a ton of confirmation bias. And the reason I say this is because a lot of the conversations that I have with people is they want to point it to one specific thing. Like, oh, if you throw weighted balls, you're going to get hurt. Well, like, I know some guy who threw weighted balls and he got hurt, and that's the reason that he got hurt. It's like, okay, well, let's take a step back and let's look at this from a logical perspective. The number of kids that now incorporate in major leaguers that incorporate weighted balls into their throwing routine in some way, shape, or form, it's a really high percentage. So when you break down the numbers from an injury perspective to just be able to draw a straight line to kids are using weighted balls now, I think that's a little bit of a misinformed take. Now, if you use them without supervision and you don't have a plan and you're not doing the drills properly, like, yeah, you're probably increasing the likelihood that you're going to get hurt. And I think you see this when it's like, well, don't go to that facility. Everybody who comes out of there gets hurt. So just because you knew one person who worked at a specific facility who ended up getting hurt doesn't mean that everybody in that facility gets hurt. In fact, it's probably the exact inverse. The vast majority of these places, I do too think a good job of preparing guys and helping them get healthy. So I don't think you can point it in that specific direction. The other thing that was interesting, and this is a conversation I had with a good friend of ours, is, and he posed the question because he's a really good thinker, is who made the decision that 5 ounces is the proper weight for us to throw all the time? Like, who's to say that throwing a 7-ounce ball isn't actually healthier for your arm, or throwing a 3-ounce ball isn't healthier? We just throw a baseball that happens to weigh 5 ounces. So we assume that that's the weight that we should be consistently throwing. And I think that's another thing that you have to think about when you're walking through some of these situations and you're walking through some of these conversations, is that it's complicated. Now, I do think at the back end of this, at least in my mind, I have a few things that I will hang my hat on that I think are really important specifically for youth kids. And this is where the parents and the coaches should probably listen in terms of where we're at with this and what we think, because I do think this is valid. This isn't coming out of a vacuum of me and you having text message conversations about this. Like, this is hundreds of conversations with coaches from all over the country who all seem to settle on some very similar things when it comes to youth sports. So, you know, it is what it is. Like, I think you got to have an honest discussion about it and bat some different ideas around. And then I think you can come to some decent conclusions at the back end of it around how specifically youth sports should handle pitchers and how they should handle wear and tear. So I'm going to throw a couple stats out there, Coach Glass. So I pulled up a study from the National Library of Medicine, more specifically the National Center of Biotechnological Information. Yeah, I'm out here researching. And this is just to provide a little bit of context around some of the numbers. So they ran a study, pitchers who threw between 2010 and 2009 and 2019. And what they found is about 26% of major league players during that time period who were pitchers ended up getting Tommy John. In a more recent article.
So 74% did not.
74% did not. Now, there's some crossover in this population, most likely, because that's obviously a 10-year window. And that's players who got hurt during that time period. This statistic, which is an article on ESPN.com, the author is not named, which is kind of odd, but a statistic from John Rogelli, apologies if I butchered your name there, but he's a baseball researcher specifically focused on Tommy John surgery. And what he has seen is that 34% of major league pitchers in 2022 have gotten Tommy John surgery. So not necessarily during the...
At some point in their careers?
At some point in their career. So not necessarily in that season.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then next year you see a slight uptick to, you know, roughly 35.5%. In 2023, it had undergone surgery at some point. And interestingly enough, this is an AP article that was written by Jay Cullen. Shout out Jay Cullen. The peak amount of Tommy John injuries that have happened at the major league level actually happened in 2015. And there was a decline for several years, and it kind of popped again in 2001. But last year and going into this year, the numbers are actually down a little bit. So it peaked at, like, maybe I'm looking at the chart. They did a really bad job labeling this from a data science perspective. but you're looking at maybe like 160, and then it got back just over 150 in what looks to be 2001 or 2021, and then down below 100 in 2022. So I think it's fair to say that we're seeing somewhat of an increase. I think it's fair to say that it's a problem that most people in the baseball world would love to be able to solve. I'll also say that if there was a biomechanical reason for this stuff happening, that I think, not that we would have found it by now, but I'm not sure if you can draw a direct line to mechanics, because I don't know if anybody's figured out the most efficient way to throw a baseball, because let's be honest, it's a really stressful thing to do. The arm's not really meant to go that way in terms of the force and the stress that's put on it. And it's why baseball players get Tommy John surgery. And softball players don't.
But to your point, I don't mean to cut you off because I think this is great. But for those of us that are old enough, like Mark Pryor coming out of college was out of USC was like the cleanest arm action. Here's a guy who his mechanics are super clean, never going to get hurt, blows out. Strasburg, dude throws a, you know, mechanics unbelievable, cleanest guy since Mark Pryor, blows out. You know, and I think that there's other guys with jacked up arm actions where you're like, that's super stabby. And like, it might not, like, that looks like it's good. It hurts and it's going to blow out. Never does. You know, so I think, like, to your point, from a biomechanist standpoint, like, if we had the answer and we had unlocked it, I think that we would have a, you know, do I think we're getting closer to it? I do. I mean, in some of the conversations I've had, I'm not smart enough, as a disclaimer, to understand all of it. However, if we had the answer, we would be doing a, you know, there it'd be even lower than where it is now.
Agree, 100%. So this is an article from Tom Verducci, who, if you haven't read Tom Verducci, I suggest you do. He's just an absolutely fantastic baseball writer. And this is where I think the conversation starts, when we start talking about recruiting and where we start talking about college baseball and what that looks like. So between 2019 and 2023, there were 19 pitchers, starting pitchers, who averaged fastball velocities of 96.5 or better. 16 of them have had at least one Tommy John surgery. And the reason I point to this as a way to kick off the next phase of this conversation is, I think one of the only true metrics that you can start to tie Tommy John to is the chase for velocity. And I think it's why you're seeing it more. I think it's why it's a little bit more prevalent than it used to be in youth sports, because let's be honest. If you want to get recruited, you need to throw hard. If you want to get drafted, you need to throw hard. It's become a prerequisite. And 10 years ago, throwing hard was a much more natural progression, right? Mm-hmm. It was kids getting bigger and stronger. It was kids long tossing. The wear and tear that was happening, the travel ball circuit wasn't nearly as consistent in terms of the time frame at which kids are playing. More kids were playing more sports. But now that chase for velocity is happening at a younger age. And I think when you start to think about the maturity of bodies, and I'm pulling some of this information, having read some of these medical documents. So once again, not an expert, but I am kind of paraphrasing what some of these experts have talked about, is if you're throwing 92, 93, 94 as a 15 or 16 year old, like, it's going to happen. And there's more kids out there at young ages throwing harder than they ever have. And with kids chasing velocity, and I don't blame them. It's not, they're a product of a system that rewards it. Right. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we know plenty of coaches that all you got to do is hit that magic 90 and you're all of a sudden a recruitable player. And we know that a lot of those guys don't work out. Some of them do, but velocity matters. And anybody who tells you it doesn't, you know, there's all kinds of statistics that show that higher velocity you throw, the more likely you are to get swing and misses, to get bad contact, yada, yada, all that kind of stuff. Misses in the strike zone, swing and misses outside of the strike zone. So it does matter. But I think for the youth baseball, this is fundamentally where it starts, is that in the last 5 years, the chase for velocity has ticked up significantly. And that's probably the thing that I would attribute it to the most, is that you have a lot of kids who are trying to throw as hard as they can, as quick as they can. And by as quick as they can, I mean, like, in as short a window of time as possible. Like, how quickly can I add 6 miles an hour to my fastball? And, you know, not everybody blows out during that process. But I do think that kids who make really extreme spikes, like, they are probably more prone to it, would be my assumption based on what I've read. But I think that's where it starts, and I think it gets rewarded, and I'm not saying it shouldn't. Like, turn on the SEC. They all throw hard. And some of those guys got there slower than others, but, I mean, Arkansas is running dudes out of their bullpen that are freshmen that are 96 to 100. Like, and it's wild, and it's cool to watch, and it's awesome for baseball, but it also begs the question, if you're a youth player or you're a parent, how can you handle your kid responsibly in terms of what their progression looks like, and put them in an advantageous position where maybe this doesn't become an issue for them prior to them getting onto a college campus, and hopefully never, but, you know, how do you avoid being a part of that 25 or 26% of the pitching population that ultimately ends up getting Tommy John?
Yeah. And I think that there's The educational aspect of it is huge. And again, I, like, you've listened to this long enough, or this is your first time here. Like, we got 25 years between the two of us coaching college baseball. We don't have the answers. And I'm admittedly not smart enough to know all of it. But that said, like, you know, if you're a parent of a youth player, like there's the protection aspect of your child, you know, but I think the other is like the, you know, you can probably, you know, I would say I would attribute some of this to the year round throwing of everything that's going on. You know, the facilities and such that are, and I'm not knocking the facilities, but you know, if you're 12 or 13, like you shouldn't be throwing a baseball 12 months out of the year. Like you got to shut down and let your body recover a little bit. Like the best in the, like, and this is where like the argument breaks down for me with people. And it's like, well, velocity doesn't matter. I mean, look at Greg Maddux. You know, he carved, like, first of all, Greg Maddux is one of the best pitchers to ever toe the rubber and throw a baseball. Secondly, those guys shut down. So like, you can't cherry pick your argument and say like, well, these guys didn't do it, but then I'm also just going to throw 24/7, 365. And for some people it works. Like I remember being at the convention and listening to David Price talk, and he threw in long toss every day. Like that doesn't work for everybody, but David Price was also put on this earth to throw a baseball. You know, so I also think like that the rise in the specialization, I mean, there's 9U tournaments that have been going on for a while. Like I didn't play, like we grew up playing Little League. Like when do you start Little League? Now? Ish?
June.
Like, yeah. Like that's my point. Like,
yeah.
May, June, like somewhere in there. Like we have 9U tournaments going on. Like, what are we doing? And then we wonder why kids get burned out. And then you have this pressure to like, this pressure from these coaches to just do it year round. What, no matter what the sport is, whether it's baseball or hoops or hockey or whatever, like let the kids be kids, man. Like, what are we doing? And then you wonder when they get like burned out or they might get hurt. Like maybe some of that was from the 9U MLK junior bash tournament that like you don't need to be throwing at in February. Like let's be smart about this. You know, so I think that like, and I do think that there is something to be said about the bigger tournaments that are just allowing guys to throw more pitches than they should be allowed to throw. Like that shouldn't happen. You have to protect the kids. And if the kid, as coaches, you have to protect your kids because they're not going to want to protect themselves. You have to be the adult in the situation. Nobody cares about your trophy. Sorry.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And like you bring up Greg Maddux, and the other side of the story will be, well, Nolan Ryan threw hard for 20 years. It's like, yeah, I get it. And this gets back to what I mentioned at the beginning, which is it's confirmation bias. It's cherry picking. Right. It's cherry picking a data point that supports your argument. And it's fundamentally irresponsible when you're looking at this from a holistic perspective. Like you're always going to have outliers. You're going to have the dude who is 88 to 91 and is awesome. And you're also going to have the dude who throws 100 who gets hit like crazy. Like, let's also not forget that Greg Maddux could get a ball to move an extraordinary amount. And he also threw freaking hard to get there. Like, that's the other part of the argument around Greg Maddux that people don't want to realize is like, before he got good, he threw 95, 96. Like, well documented. But to your point about the responsibility of the coaches, and I think part of the issue here is that we put the responsibility on the coaches and the coaches don't take it. And like, that's a direct call out. If you're a youth coach or you're a high school coach, like, your game isn't, especially for travel ball, like your game is not more important than that kid's health. And there's no argument against it. There's no argument that stands up that you should run a kid out there for 120 pitches in freaking June. Like, it's irresponsible. And the coaches need to take that bull by the horns, period. And parents, if you let your kid go out there and throw 120 pitches under the guise of him being tough, you're part of the problem too. And you need to protect your kid. And it's not, they're not less competitive because they didn't complete a game in high school. Right? That has nothing to do with it. But if your kid has a chance to play at the collegiate level, you need to be the responsible one in the room. Those coaches need to be the responsible ones in the room. Here's the other thing that,
well, you're right. But even college coaches, like the vast majority of them are going to protect their players from themselves. And for a couple different reasons. One, it's just the right thing to do. And look, as coaches, we want kids who want the ball, right? But as a coach and adult, you have to see the bigger picture. That Ryan Yerby, and I've said this before, Ryan Yerby, his junior year, he had a forearm issue and couldn't grip the baseball and was trying to pitch through it. And I went out to the mound. I was like, yo, what is going on? And he's like, I can't grip the ball. I haven't for two innings. And it started the inning before. It was the second inning. And it started at the end. And I noticed this is weird. It's not coming out as clean. So he didn't throw well the first hitter. I go out and I'm like, yo, what's going on? He's like, I can't really grip the baseball. I'm like, okay, how long is this going on? He's like, about three hitters. I'm like, I need to know this, right? So we shut him down because at the end of the day, he's our best pitcher. But two, I need you healthy at the end of the year. I don't need you healthy at the start of the year. And any coach will tell you this, we want to win games. 100% we want to win games. But what matters is being able to be healthy to make a playoff push. And winning two or three games on the front end of the year isn't necessarily going to determine where you are in the back half of the year. I need to win the games that are important with our guys. And I need you healthy for that. And then the other part of it is you're paid to win games. So, I know I'm contradicting myself a tad bit here, but if I don't have a healthy team on the back end of the season when it matters and I'm in a playoff push, it's all for naught. Winning that non-conference game at the start of the year doesn't matter. I need to win conference games and get into the conference tournament and make a playoff push there. So, not to say you're giving them away because you're not, but you need you need to be able to see the bigger picture. And the flip side to it is if he gets hurt as a junior or sophomore, he might not ever be able to throw again. And that doesn't do us any, that does the kid no service. It does the team no service. If you start leveling up and guys might be able to play professionally and do those things, those go out the window because you want to win a Wednesday midweek and throw them 120 pitches instead of 90. And that's absurd, in my opinion. But I think that the vast majority of college coaches feel the same way. And I think the other part of it that gets lost in this argument is, you see the overall number, right? He threw 120. That doesn't count what he threw in the bullpen. That doesn't count in between innings. That doesn't take into account every single thing that was thrown. He probably threw 40 in the bullpen. Now we're up to 160. Yep. If he threw seven innings,
it's another 35.
Six times five is what, 35? Yep. Or 30? And then you have 30 plus eight. There's another 38. There's another 40. We're up to almost 200.
And that's not even counting his pregame before he gets on the mound stuff where he long tossed and he threw a flat ground box, box drill before he got up on the mound. But
everyone looks at that overall number of he threw 120. Yeah, he did. But we've had this conversation about a lot of stuff because this stuff will come across and, we text about this stuff. I always make the jokes. I make the joke, but it's hyperbole. It's the Nuke LaLoosh in Bull Durham, 18 walks, new league record, 18 strikeouts. How many pitches did this guy throw in his first outing in professional baseball? Even if it's just 4-3, if he's punching out guys in three and walking guys in four, he's up to 180 pitches. What? That's not a real thing. And I think that's where, especially at the youth level, that gets lost. They might not throw that hard and some guys do and some guys don't, but there's a lot more that goes into that stuff. There's a lot more pitches that are being thrown. There's a lot more than just that overall number. And I think it's something that, I don't necessarily have the answer. I guess I suppose I have some ideas, but that's where, I think it gets lost on people. We're like, yeah, he threw 120 pitches. But he also threw 40 to get ready and another 40 in between innings. It's 165 pitches, really, or 200 pitch, whatever, because it's another 80. So you're close to 200 pitches that day for what? Right? High school game? Or an AAU game? What?
Yeah. Yeah, it just it doesn't make a lot of sense. And here's another issue I have, and this is I think this is directly related to the travel ball stuff, right? And yeah, this is I'm just going to speak honestly about it. Like the way these tournaments are set up and the way coaches try to win these tournaments is part of the problem, right? Mm-hmm. Having a kid go, planning your weekend out where a kid throws three inning on Thursday and then you bring him back again on Sunday and you're like, well, he only threw 45 pitches on Thursday and then he's going to throw 45 again on Sunday. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that coaches make, and they don't understand that the stress of having to come back on short rest. And it doesn't really matter how many pitches you throw. Like, we're at the college level, like big time Division I college baseball with guys who are going to go play professionally. And if you threw 45 pitches on Friday, you ain't throwing the rest of the weekend. Unless we're in an absolute emergency situation, right? We tracked all that stuff and we wouldn't do it with our college kids. What makes you think it's okay to do it with your 15-year-old? Go get more freaking pitchers. You want to make more money? You want to go get more guys to throw on your team instead of showing up to the tournament with seven arms and then half of those guys go out and play a position the next day. Bring 14 of them and give those kids a better chance to prepare. It'll also be better for their showcase ability. Because if I'm a coach and I miss that Thursday start, and that kid's, say he's 85 to 88 and he's really sharp on Thursday and I don't get to see him, and then I come back and I see him on Sunday and he's 83 to 85 and has trouble with command because the kid's freaking sore, or you caught him the day before, like, you've now hurt the kid, not only physically, but you've hurt that kid's recruiting process. And I think
to your point, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I think it's important to say, like, when you see guys doing it at the college level, right? Like, you get the, and you'll start to see it here in the next month or so when we get into conference tournaments, and like, you'll see a dude in a regional throw on Thursday and, you know, come back and throw on Sunday or whatever it might be, right? Saturday or however the tournament sets up. But it's important to remember that the vast majority of those situations, I'm not going to say all because that would be dangerous of me to say, but the vast majority of those situations are going to be situations in which it's a gut, like, first of all, like, they're older, like, they're more physical, they can handle a little bit more stress, and they've been on a strict throwing program where, like, they've done this stuff before. Like, this isn't something where it's like, hey, we're going to throw you on Thursday and then you're throwing on Sunday again. And then you're also going to play center field, shortstop, and third base in the interim. Like, you're going to throw on Thursday. You're going to do all your arm care and everything after the game. Then you're going to do all your recovery and everything on Friday. You're probably going to throw a little bit on Saturday to see how you feel. And if you don't feel good, the likelihood of you throwing is substantially lower. If you come out of that and you're like, yo, I feel good, like, now you're an option. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to throw, but you're an option. But, like, those guys have trained for this in that, like, in these moments. Like, we're talking about at the college level, like, they're college kids, they're more physical, and they've trained to do this where, like, they're only pitching. They're not going and playing shortstop or catching and center field and doing all this other stuff for another handful of innings and then trying to get back on the bump. Like, it is strictly set up for them to be able to recover as fast as they can and then get back out. And it's something that I think that it's an important distinction to make, because, like, and I, you know, we did it when I was coaching, like, in the fall, like, I would throw, and it's limited pitch count stuff, but, like, I would throw guys on back-to-back days in the inner squads because I wanted to see if they could do it. And it wasn't necessarily, you know, it was something like, hey, like, if you can give me an inning on Saturday and an inning on Sunday, or two and one, like, that might be a really good option for us. Let's see if you can do it. And, like, we're talking minimal pitch count stuff to be able to do it. But then if they can, like, we train for that. Like, there's a different method to do that than somebody who's just going to throw three innings on Saturday and they're done for the weekend. Right? Like, so there's, I think that's an important distinction to make. Like, I 100% agree with you. I think that it is absurd that we do that. I also had a problem when I was coaching. I'm going to be like, oh, can I get my bullpen into the game? Like, no, that's not, like, no, we're not doing bullpens in the game. That's not what this is. I hate that. I hate that in college summer ball. I hate that in anything. Like, the intent behind a bullpen from a practice standpoint and what you're doing in a game are two completely different things. Like, there, it's not, nobody can tell me, like, I don't, like, I will argue with Matt Hobbs about this. I do not like it. I think that is wrong. And I, like, those are so, like, I hate that, whatever, mindset behind it. Like, no, bullpens are for the bullpen. Game is for game. We're not throwing practice in the game. That's not what we're doing. You know, so I think that sorry to cut you off, but that was, I think that that is an important distinction to make at the college level. It's completely different at the AAU level and the college level when you see it, because it's not like, yeah, you might be like, well, he did it in college. Like, yeah, man, but like, he's 21 years old. He's been in the weight room for 5 years. He's 6'4", 225 pounds. And he's been training to do this for 4 years, not 16 years old, 165 pounds. And you played every other position on the field in between outings.
Yeah, it's not the same. It's apples and oranges. And in part of it is the scheduling. It's not just the coach. Like, this is where the conversation gets complicated, is that there's a lot of factors in this, right? Like, you go down to the perfect game, the world would bat down in Georgia. If you make it out of the pool play, unless you got 10 arms, like, somebody's getting put in a shitty spot, because you're asking them to win two games a day for 2 or 3 days straight. Like, it's absurd. So yes, the coaches are at fault in a sense for having a kid throw three times while they're down there, but the program directors are at fault too, because you set the freaking schedule up that way. Also, you could pack more games in and make more money. Like, let's not beat around the bush. It's exactly what it is. And if you really cared about the arms and you really cared about the health of arms at that level, you would either have less games or you would spread them out more, and you would give these teams a better chance to go through the process in a healthy manner. And then on the other side of it, people get mad when, like, the Canes or, you know, name whatever big organization has a roster with 12 POs. Like, don't get mad at them. Like, they're doing it the right way. Dan Gitson protects his guys.
Yes.
Guys with the Canes. Like, his Canes national team, like, they don't mess with the health of those guys. And it's why they have 25 guys on the roster. But they also tell most of them, hey, man, you're just pitching. You ain't playing shortstop after this one. And they take care of those kids. So they're not the problem. They're just better equipped to do it than the smaller organization who happens to have some pretty good players and gets into pool play. The Canes are just better equipped to do it. And, you know, like, you can't point fingers at all these guys. And, like, that's the confirmation bias, is you try to find somebody to blame it all on. And, you know, I think it's a huge issue in travel baseball right now, that the coaches need to do a better job of handling their players. And you need to really take, and it's not to say that winning isn't important, but you can't sacrifice the health of your players to try to win the Diamond Nation Super 17. Like, get out of here. Like, nobody cares. Did you get your kids recruited? Did you put your kids in a situation to be evaluated fairly, because you gave them a chance to show up and put their best foot forward, and you didn't sacrifice their health in order to win some freaking pool play game on a backfield at 7 p.m. on a Sunday? Like, get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Can't tell me otherwise.
No, because if you don't catch the kid's first outing where he was good, like, you can tell me he was good, but if I didn't see it, like, if I don't really know you, like, how am I supposed to really believe that? And then I see him go out and he's 76 to 78 and can't get out of an inning because he's just getting barreled. Like, that's what I'm seeing. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I can find a lot of pitchers that can do this and get outs. And I can also find a lot of kids that throw a lot harder and have better breaking stuff than get outs. Like, why would I recruit this kid?
Yep.
You know, and I think it's, you know, you're right. Like, it falls on the organizations. It falls on the people who run these tournaments. Like, you know, and we grew up in an era where we didn't have this stuff. There was no Diamond Nation. There was no NEBC. There was no Baseball Heaven. Like, that stuff didn't exist when we grew up. Like, you know, and I saw something the other day about Legion Ball, and, like, that's a completely other topic. Like, it, whatever. But, you know, I think the overall point is, like, you used to just go play, you know, it was kind of like a college summer. Really? Like you would just like you'd go play, you'd play games on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and then you'd play Saturdays and Sundays, double headers, or you might play a small little round robin tournament where you play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, and it wasn't what this was. Like I remember going and playing TCB baseball over in Connecticut and the Connecticut Blue Jays and Brooklyn Youth Service. And I mean, Youth Service had dudes and Bayside Yankees with Mark Cassetta. And, you know, they had guys like it was, you know, like you would go play the Virginia Barnstormers and the Maryland Orioles. Like you just find some of the better teams and go play and see how you stacked up. And like that was awesome. One, because you really played good competition and you were able to kind of see where you stack up. But the other was like you were able to throw best on best. It was like a college setting all the time. And, you know, it's gotten away from that. And I don't necessarily like, and look, I get it. Like, and in the same argument, like I'll tell you flat out, and I've said this for years, like as college coaches were the problem in some sense, because we continue to show up to Diamond Nation and Baseball Heaven and down in Georgia at the Worldwood Bat. Like, we're part of the problem too, because if we don't show up, they don't really have a product. Like the people are going to stop going, and then they'll be forced to do something different. But when we continue to show up, what is forcing them to actually change what they're doing? Right? Like they're like, why are we going to change what we're doing? If it's not the old adage, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Like these guys keep showing up, and we're not doing anything different. So if anything, let's do a little bit more and see what we can do. And, you know, so like to your point, like there's a lot of moving pieces in this, and not everybody is clean in this entire argument, right? Like it's the youth, it's the high school coaches, it's the AAU guys, it's the people who run the tournaments, it's the college coaches. Like it's everybody has some sort of a piece in these issues. And I'm not saying, you know, and I want to be clear, because we do have a lot of college, like, but you have to be honest with yourself. Like, I'm not saying that the college guys are causing guys to blow out, right? Like, I'm not saying that, but like, we keep showing up to these tournaments that we complain that you're seeing kids throw an exorbitant amount of innings and pitches. Like, don't show up, go to a different game. But it's not going to happen, because the vast majority of us don't have giant recruiting budgets like you have in the SEC or the ACC, where you can just go to one-off games and see a bunch of guys play. Like, you are going to show up because you can split a hotel room and sleep with four other coaches, because that's what happens in college baseball when you recruit, and see 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 teams and watch all those games. And because it costs you astronomically less to do that than it would to go watch a bunch of one-off games all summer long.
But I'll add to this, because I think you're right. But I will say that most college coaches, like I'll use Worldwood Bat as an example. Most college coaches dip out once they get out of the first round of the playoffs, because they know exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
They're like, I don't want to see that kid throw again for the third time this weekend, because I know what I'm going to see. So I'll give some guys credit there. But yeah, like the coaches are a part of it. I don't think that they're the ones to blame, but like, to your point, like there's a lot of layers to this, and there's a lot of reasons that you see some of the stuff happen in travel ball.
Yeah, I want
to
be clear.
Fundamentally, it's driven by the desire to get recruited, just like trying to throw hard is the driving factor in getting recruited.
And I want to be clear, like I'm not laying the blame at anyone's feet, because I don't, like there's far too many, again, moving pieces in all of this. Like I'm not laying the blame at anyone's feet.
Yeah.
But like I think it would be naive and misguided.
I think we should dump it all on one college coach, just to be fair. Like, who do we want to dump this on? I'm pretty sure it's just their fault.
I have three or four in mind.
There's so many factors, and like that's what we get back to the confirmation bias and trying to find one reason why this happens. Like, oh well, guys are throwing med balls. Like that's, they're gonna blow out if you throw med balls. Well, I would actually say that there's, of the number of guys who throw med balls, and you could talk to guys who are way more nuanced in this particular mechanism of training than we are, but I know a lot of pitching coaches who don't use med balls to get guys to throw harder. They use it as part of their arm care routine, and they use it to retrain quality patterns in the way kids throw. So I think there's also a misconception that everybody just picks up a heavy ball and throws it as hard as they can, and then they pick up a light ball and they throw it as hard as they can. Like, it's a lot more dialed in and measured than that, right? So I hate the pointing the fingers at one specific thing, because I don't think there's one thing. With that being said, I think we can both come up with some general guidelines. If you're a parent or you're a coach, I think there's some things specifically at the high school level, and you could go even earlier than this because it's wild. Some of the stuff that I see that gets posted about, to your point, like 9U and 10U tournaments. I think there's a couple things that me and you probably agree on that can be used as guidelines to try to keep your kid healthy, try to keep them happy, try to keep them engaged, and try to keep them from getting burnt out. And first thing for me is play another sport.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, for me, this isn't just about putting down a baseball, right? Because you can still hit and take ground balls if you play basketball. Like, let's not get it twisted. But if you want to create a better athlete, baseball is not the sport to focus on because it's limited movements. I mean, shit, we only turn left.
What is this, NASCAR?
Yeah. But it's limited movements. It's rotational. It's straight line sprinting. It's turning. Like, it's limited movements. Like, if you want to increase athleticism, which is every coach that we've had on here, every single coach that we've had on here, and there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of really good ones, foundationally, they want good athletes, because good athletes can play defense, they can create bat speed, they can throw hard, they can throw strikes. Like, good athletes win. And if you want your son to be a good athlete, let them play other sports. Not only is it good for them to get away from the baseball field, but you're going to train them to do other stuff. Basketball is going to train you athletically in a completely different way than going to the gym and doing a bunch of box jumps is, right? Like, playing football, playing soccer, wrestling. Like, I think there's so much value. And it's not to say that you shouldn't specialize at some point, right? If you get to 16 and you know that this is what you want to do, and maybe you're not the best basketball player, or maybe you're not the best football player and you want to focus on baseball, I get it. But watching kids specialize in baseball as 12-year-olds, like, it doesn't do them any good, because skill acquisition is easier, in my opinion, than athleticism. You can always get your reps in baseball. It's a low stress rep sport when you're talking about the skill portion of it. Ground balls, hitting, taking fly balls, like, that's low stress repetition that allows you to hone your skills. But you cannot replicate the movements you need to make on a basketball court, on a baseball field, right? Like, we've created a generation of kids who are good at cone drills and hand drills as infielders. Like, we've lost the kids who just go take ground balls. And I mean, shoot, there's a clip of Nolan Arenado and Ozzie Smith, arguably the two best defenders in the history of baseball at their positions. I'm sure some people have some argument, like Brooks Robinson and Mike Schmidt or Scott Rowland, whatever. Nolan Arenado's in the conversation. Ozzie Smith is as well. Both of those two dudes are talking about, well, what do you do? I took ground balls. Right? Like, so that's repetitive stuff that you can get all the time. And you don't need a trainer. You don't need some special infield guru to put a paddle on your hand so you can go take ground balls. Like, just go take ground balls. But that other sport is a natural way to put your kid in an environment where they have to compete in a different field. They have to play a team sport in almost every situation, where basketball is a team, football is a team, soccer is a team. It's a very different team sport than baseball. You're forced to have to commingle. The pace of the game is very different. There's a ton of value in that from an athletic perspective, but you're organically getting them away from baseball and all these overuse injuries and giving them a chance to mature as an athlete, mature as a person, get them around some different people. So that's the first thing that I come to, is that if the only sport your kid plays at 9 years old, and I don't care how much they love baseball, I think you're making a mistake in their ability to continue to get better. Because it's not a coincidence when you look at the absolute top end of the field for baseball, outside of the guys who are in the Dominican Republic and in Venezuela and from different countries where they other sports are much less prevalent, the American-born players, it's not a coincidence that when you look into the background, a lot of these guys, they were really good athletes, not just really good baseball players.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a coincidence.
No, not at all. But I think you're dead on. Like, and we've talked about this quite a bit before. And I'm uniquely positioned, I would say, because not coaching anymore and doing some other things socially, I'm around a lot of people who have children that are, you know, a little bit older than my son. And we're talking 7, 8, 9, 10 year old. And like the social pressure that they're getting from other families and from coaches to specialize and be doing hockey or basketball or baseball year round is immense. You know, and I've had a lot of conversations with people who are like, hey, what do you think? I'm like, man, I was a three sport athlete up until I was a senior in high school. Like, I don't, you know, maybe they don't do that anymore, but like, there's no reason to be specializing at a super young age. Like, what benefit is that? Like, what, I don't see there being a long-term benefit. And like, you know, looking back and, you know, I'm not trying to be like that old guy who, you know, but I won a state championship in high school for baseball my senior year. We had like 8 or 9 guys that went and played like college baseball. There was a lot of Division I guys on there too. Like every single one of them played multiple sports. You know, like 2 of those guys went and played at Ithaca. They played soccer and baseball at Ithaca. Like, you know, so there's a lot of positives that come from playing different sports. And, you know, Carl used to say this all the time, like, you know, especially for pitchers, like it's a closed loop skill. Like, you know, you're doing the same thing over and over and over again. Like you can do that quite a bit in the off season of like, you could do dry mechanic stuff in front of a mirror during basketball season and not throw a ball. You know, so like there's a lot of things that go into it, but the promotion of being an athlete, you know, like we've talked about it and other coaches have, like you show up and watch a game, like one of the first things you do is watch how the kid moves. And, you know, playing other sports promotes a little bit more athleticism there, whether it's, you know, basketball or football or soccer or hockey or whatever it might be. Like you're going to see some more athleticism in those kids than kind of the ones. And you can see it when you've been around it long enough, but like the burnout factor, the overuse factor, like all of this stuff, like there's no reason to be specializing. And I think that like, you know, it's become a business on that side of things. And I think like, you know, that's part of it as well. Like, you know, we want to keep the money flowing, so let's keep doing this year round. Like, you know, you know, it's my own theory, but there's no reason to be specializing. And I heard someone the other day, they were talking about my niece who's 7. Like, nah, if she could focus, she'd be really good at lacrosse. Like, yo, she's 7. Like, she's 7 years old. And my niece is a savage. Do not get me wrong. She is a savage, and I think she's going to be good. But like, she's 7 or 8, whatever it is. Regardless, she's 7 or 8 years old. Like, what are we focusing on here? Like scholarships? No one's coming to watch for another 10 years. Like, come on. You know, but I think that like there becomes this notion of like, you got to be good super early. And in order to be able to get recruited and do all this stuff, like, you know, you got to be able to play and specialize. Like, you know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the vast majority of people aren't going to make it to the show. Like there's less than 22,000 people who have played Major League Baseball since the 1800s. Less than 22,000. Like, it doesn't mean that you can't be a college baseball player and have a phenomenal career. And that doesn't mean that you can play college baseball and potentially get drafted and or sign as an undrafted free agent and play kick around for a couple years. But like, it's hard. There's a reason why those guys are the best in the world at what they do. And it's one of the few sports that you can legitimately say it is the best in the world. You got guys from Japan, you got guys from the U.S. and Cuba and the Dominican and Venezuela and Puerto Rico, even though it's a U.S. protectorate. But like, you have all of these people, like, you're literally competing against the best in the world every day. Like, you got to be good, man. And it doesn't mean that you have to specialize at nine. Like, go be an athlete. And that might be able to help you become a better baseball player. If it's baseball, right? Like, you could be listening to this and your kid wants to play hoops. Like, same thing. Don't specialize in hoops. Go play other sports.
Yeah, I think it's huge. The other thing I would implore parents to do is, you need to be the adult in the room when it comes to monitoring how much your kid is throwing. And I think time between throwing is really important, especially for young kids, that you don't need to pitch on Thursday and then pitch on Sunday. Like, let them go out, let them compete, make sure that you're monitoring how much they're throwing. And you can prevent some of that overuse stuff, because it does compile. I think it's probably a fair assumption to say that, you know, maybe not all throws are created equal, but if, you know, those days where they run a 14-year-old out to throw 125 pitches, like, you can't tell me that somewhere down the line that game isn't hurting that kid. I think rest is really important during the season, and just make sure you're monitoring your kid and make sure that they're communicating with you, because it's, you know, you gotta look out for your kid, and you gotta make sure that these coaches aren't going to put them in a situation. Because a lot of times what happens is that you get a young kid who's pretty good, and the coaches just want to throw that guy because you're going to get a win every time. And like, sometimes you got to step in and be like, hey man, you threw Thursday, you're not throwing on Sunday.
No.
Like, you threw 100 pitches yesterday, you're not catching tomorrow. Like, maybe we DH, maybe we play first base. Like, these are small decisions that I think that parents should be a part of. And I think coaches, you got to, and I'm talking more youth coaches and not college coaches, but you have to be cognizant of this stuff, and it's your responsibility to protect these kids. I really, truly believe that. And at no point should you sacrifice a kid's health for a win that's meaningless. Like, it's irresponsible, it's selfish, and it's ego driven. And I think that, you know, those are two big factors for me that, like, yeah, it's not, you know, there's other things that you're going to have to take into consideration, and you're going to have to make some educated guesses on what to do in terms of, well, I'm 16 and I need to add some velocity. Like, yeah, but do it responsibly. Do it with somebody who's going to monitor you, and don't chase that velocity super early in your career, because being the best 14-year-old in the country literally doesn't matter anymore, because nobody can get recruited. There's no return on that investment. And it's not to say that you shouldn't strive to be the best 14-year-old, but you shouldn't be trying to throw as hard as you can as a 14-year-old. Like, how about let's get good at throwing strikes? Like, let's get good at moving really well. Let's be a really good competitor and let some of that progression happen a little bit more naturally. And I would have to make the assumption that you're less likely to get injured if you let that progression happen a little bit more organically, instead of trying to put it on fast forward at an early stage in a kid's development.
Yeah, there's no, I don't have anything to really add to that. I think that it's pretty straightforward. Like, I think that you need to be an advocate for your kids, you know, and I do think, like, especially in a lot of situations, like, kids aren't necessarily, they're learning to be advocates for themselves. And I think sometimes it's super hard for them to say no to an adult or even a coach. And that's where you can end up in some issues. And I think that that's where, you know, having those conversations, and look, like, you know, I do have something to add. I do think that sometimes parents are, what's the best word to say? I don't want to say scared, because that's not the right word. I think that they're worried. It'll come to me. They don't want to necessarily say get in the way of the coaches for fear of, like, when their kid gets recruited, the coaches are like, well, their parents are, you know, they're a nightmare. They're tough to deal with because you're being active in your kid's protection of their arm and such. When that's not necessarily, you know, there's a difference in advocating for your son and helping them advocate for themselves that they need to be like healthy and such. And, you know, questioning everything and being a pain in the butt. Those are two wildly different things. And to be completely honest with you, like, you know, we can usually discern that pretty quickly from a coaching and recruiting standpoint of like, you know, hey, I might recruit this kid. Like, I heard the parents are a little bit tough. And then like you have conversations, it's like, yeah, like, you know, we were just super proactive and very, we advocated for him to not throw on Thursday and Saturday in high school. And, you know, they didn't really love that. Like, that's a different conversation than, you know, yeah, we don't understand what the coach is doing. Like, he hits him in the five hole and he should be hitting in the one hole. And like, you know, I let coach, like, those are two wildly different conversations in two, like, one's a green flag and one's a red flag. Shout out to Anthony Silkwood, but you know, it's, those are two different things. And I think that sometimes there's the fear or the hesitation, hesitation is probably the better word, in doing that because you're afraid, you're worried that, you know, it's going to come back to bite you in the butt that, you know, they're a pain or my kid's soft or whatever, when like, that's not, that shouldn't be the worry, especially at a young age. Like, you know, that's, there's no reason to really fret over that stuff. And if you have, and here's the other thing, and I'll say this, like, is like you'll see it on social media and such, like, you know, the jumping of summer teams and all this, like, there's way more summer teams than there ever was when, you know, even 10 years ago. But I do think that, like, if you're in a situation where it's not, like, safety and not, you know, overthrowing and all this stuff is not a priority, like, you should absolutely go look elsewhere to try to find something where your son is going to be, you know, put in the best situation, not only for himself, but to be recruited. Like, if you are not finding that where you are, like, let's face it, we've talked about this before, like, it costs a lot of money. Like, if you're paying for something and you're not being protected and you're not being put in an advantageous spot to be recruited, like, you should absolutely take your money elsewhere. Like, that's the beauty of the free market system. Like, you can leave. And sometimes it's not, you know, sometimes it's not because of, you know, playing time or, you know, whatever. Sometimes it's because I'm not being protected. Other times it's like, yo, we never practice. Like, we only play 20 games and that's it. Where, you know, another organization, like, yeah, we play 30 games and we practice three times a week. Like, I would go to that place. I'm going to develop a lot more over there. Like, there's something to be said about that. So I don't think it's necessarily that negative. Now, if we're jumping seven teams a year, like, yeah, maybe some red flags there.
I think the big takeaway there is just be an advocate for your kid. And it doesn't mean that you need to overparent or you need to overcriticize a coach. But if your kid's not being protected, they're not being handled appropriately, like, there's some really basic fundamentals here. Like, it's not hard to count pitches. It's not hard to look at a schedule and go, no, they're not throwing Thursday and Saturday. They get through Thursday or Saturday, but like, they're not throwing both of those days. Like, it's reasonable. And if you have a coach that pushes back on that, you need to go somewhere else because they don't care about your kid. It's that simple. They can say that they do and they'll tell you, you know, we're talking to college coach or whatever, but if their actions don't speak to that, they have the best interest in mind for your kid, then that's all that matters. The words don't matter. It's the actions those coaches take. And if they protect your kid, they'll understand. Like, it's that simple. So anything else you want to add on this topic, coach? We got pretty passionate about this one. There's no one easy answer to this, but I think there's some stuff that parents can do and players can do to help prevent it.
No, I don't really have anything to add. I think that there's no, to your point, there's no real cut and dry answer to all of this. I think we've shown light on a lot of the things, and like we could, you know, we talked about this, I think yesterday when we were talking about what we were going to talk about, like we could probably talk about this for another hour and a half to 2 hours on here and, you know, make this a super long one. And I think that we could also bring in a handful of people that, you know more than we do on certain things and have a little bit more of a detailed conversation about stuff. But like, I think the point is, like, when you see all this stuff in online and on social media and you see it, you know, because obviously it's been big in the news with big leaguers, like there's more to the conversation than just, you know, these guys throw weighted balls or these guys throw hard, or like there's a lot more that goes into this that's gotten us to this point. And, you know, I think we're in a better spot than we were, you know, recently, but I do think that we can continue to do a better job, you know, monitoring this stuff and keeping the younger kids safe so that we continue to have a lot of healthy pitchers that are going to be able to not only showcase themselves and go to college and do those things, but, you know, potentially make it to the show and play professionally and achieve their dreams from that standpoint. And I think that it starts with, you know, a lot of these types of conversations and such.
Yeah. One last disclaimer. We are not doctors, but we do have,
we did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
We did. But
you know, it's a joke for the parents out there.
Combined 40 plus years of college baseball, like in some way, shape or form. It's I think it's a worthy topic for us to talk about. And we're certainly not just channeling our own thoughts. These are, you know, a lot of this information is on the backs of conversations with people who are really well informed on the topic and have some very well formed opinions. So hopefully you learned something. Hopefully there's something to take away. If nothing else, hopefully it's a good conversation starter. And I'm sure we'll circle back to this at some point. And for any of the statistics or the articles that we mentioned, I will work to get that in the show notes and so people can reference that, because there are some good articles, they're well written. And if anybody wants to dig into some of the statistics, it's always interesting to look at some of that stuff. So we'll put that in the show notes. But until next week, thank you for listening and look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMDBaseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on EMDBaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.